Radiotopia.
I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Dear Diary.
Sixth grade.
February 14th.
1991.
I am really depressed.
How could she break up with me?
Mom, you can't read this.
So one of the worst things that I've ever done to somebody romantically would be in middle school, eighth grade, there was this guy who I loved. Or at least I loved the idea of him. He was kind of a dick.
Growing up in Idaho, Camille had a crush on a classmate named Justin. She just had a funny way of showing it.
Justin had gotten his whole lunch and he had paid, and he got like 3 feet into the actual lunchroom and just kind of toppled over his whole tray onto his all black clothes, because we were all emo in middle school. And I'm pretty sure it was mashed potato Thursday and like turkey. He was just like, this is horrible and embarrassing.
You would think this is the moment where middle school Camille would take pity on her crush and offer him support. But instead,
middle school Camille was terrible. I definitely was like the loudest laughing person in the lunchroom. Horrifying for a middle schooler, horrifying for him, hilarious to me.
And then she kept teasing him about it, again and again, like negging before there was a term for negging.
So I loved to bring it up at any given moment, especially when new people were around or adults were around. And I would always bring it up. I would then die laughing hysterically, and the poor thing would be like, oh my God, why am I friends with you?
We all do crappy things in the name of love. Sometimes intentionally, sometimes not.
Do I feel bad about that?
But once we realize what we've done, a thought sneaks into our mind. Is there such a thing as romantic retribution?
Yeah, I would say that I think that dating karma exists. I think it works in mysterious ways. Like, I don't know that it's straightforward where it's like, if you cheat, you get cheated on. Maybe it's like, if you cheat next time you're on a date, cheese fondue will fall on your head or something. But I totally believe that what you give is what you will receive. In my own life, whenever something goes wrong, I'm like, ooh, is this because I made fun of blank for so many years?
From PRX and Radiotopia, this is the Mortified Podcast. I'm Dave. And today we present tales of teenagers who can't help but worry if the heart they broke is finally coming back to haunt them. Meet the kids who discover the hard way. Does dating karma exist?
In eighth grade, I met Sean in my English class. We would do things like talk on the phone for like 6 hours a night.
As a teenager, Danny never intended to break anyone's heart.
It turned out Sean kind of liked me in freshman year and asked me to a dance, and I reluctantly said yes, but I was so nervous the whole time. I was so nervous that I completely ignored him and didn't dance with him once.
Danny felt awful, in part because she knew it was mean.
I tortured myself over it constantly.
But also because she believed from that moment on, her teenage love life was doomed.
I believe in karma in general. You know, if you're mean, you're gonna have something bad happen to you later.
And so it was that Danny suddenly found herself cursed with an intense crush on Sean. while Sean found himself with a crush on someone who was definitely not Danny.
September 23rd. Last night I talked to Sean and confessed my crush on him. I have to stop. He doesn't like me like that, and I can't be obsessed. I feel so dumb. I wish I knew exactly what he thought of me. Does he think I'm pretty or anything? Does he think I'm fat and ugly? Does he think I just want a piece of his ass? Or does he know the actual truth? November 16th. That girl Ashley, who Sean likes, really likes him. Sad, huh? I wonder why Sean used to like me. It wasn't because I'm pretty. I'm not. Maybe because I was nice. Too bad I'm a bitch now. I can't help but feel like I'm really a bitch. Am I? Emily said I'm not, but she's even bitchier than me, so I wouldn't trust her answer. Love, Danielle. P.S. Oh, Emily was such a bitch. She's like, Ashley's like fit and so's Sean, so they'll make a cute couple. And I was about to yell, why don't you just say I'm a fat ass? December 4th. I know practically everything I write in here is about Sean, but I like him so much. Like so much I'd do almost anything for him. Do you, whoever you are, even understand this? I like Sean. I never thought this would happen. Look at what's happening to me. I am so confused. I think about him constantly. Not in nasty sexual ways or anything. I listen to 93X now. I've even started watching less TV. He doesn't watch any. And I have re-fallen in love with Pacific Sunwear. What the fuck is wrong with me? December 15th. After school, Jesse and I hung out for a while. It was fun and stuff, but I wish Sean was there. But no, he had weight training, and then he went to the holiday dance. He probably went with Ashley. They're probably both great dancers. I hate using old-fashioned expressions, but I was born with two left feet. I also can't carry a tune in a bucket. Ugh, this song on the radio reminds me of him. Here's a list of all the songs that remind me of Sean. One, all of them. You know, it's times like this I think I'll be a virgin forever, you know? I could always be a nun. Too bad I don't believe in God. December 21st. I must be jealous of Ashley. Sad, I actually admitted it. I feel bad, but why shouldn't I be jealous of her? She's pretty, skinny, athletic. Sean likes her. She's funny, nice. God, I better shut up. My confidence is gone. Okay, here are my good points. One, I'm good at drawing. Other than that, I'm exactly the opposite of Ashley. I totally felt like the universe was trying to pay me back. Like, here's your karma. You were such a bitch to him, and now you have to watch this gorgeous girl, like, always at his side. I mean, I was a dramatic 15-year-old girl who, like, didn't love herself, you know? So I felt like I deserved whatever punishment that the universe bestowed upon me for being mean to him at that dance and for rejecting him because he was chubby.
February 3rd, 2001. The Snow Days dance was tonight. I wrote an email saying I was glad I didn't go, but that I hoped he and Ashley had fun. But who am I kidding? I want them to break up. February 11th. Tomorrow I think Sean and I might go see a movie, but it's not for sure, you know? February 12th. Guess what? Yep, Sean and I will never go to a movie, ever. His grandma said he shouldn't go. He also said, movies were he and Ashley's thing. Whatever, everyone loves movies. Movies are everyone's thing. Besides that, what isn't their thing? Jesus, I think if I asked Sean for a ride home, he'd be like, sorry, rides home are for me and Ashley. March 2nd, just before first hour, I was going to get a water. On my way there, I saw something I knew I would see sooner or later. Something I believed would have a devastating effect on my life. I saw Sean kissing Ashley. I walked past them, trying not to fall over dead or whatever. And as I was going up the stairs, Sean caught up to me. I was thinking about how perfect they were for each other and how I should just be happy for them. Hey, Danny. Oh, hey, I saw you guys. You guys are so cute. Uh-oh, I'm getting jealous. I better stop. I am happy for them, I am not jealous. That is something losers do, get jealous. I am not going to be a loser. I am happy for them. I am happy Ashley is so fucking perfect, and I am happy I am not.
That haunted me and made me just feel like total shit the entire sophomore year. That only needed to happen to me once. Like, that was enough. Like, I feel really bad about what happened, and like, now the shoe's on the other foot. I'm getting what I deserve. I definitely believed in karma, and this like really reinforced that belief. Like, it's real. It's 100% real.
That was Danny, recorded on stage at the Amsterdam in the Twin Cities. Do you like the stories you hear on the Mortified podcast? See it live. We've got upcoming shows in cities across the country. This week, you can catch us in Baltimore and Los Angeles. This spring, you can catch events in Portland, San Francisco, Oakland, Austin, Chicago, Brooklyn, DC, and more. Get your tickets at getmortified.com. Now, while Danny spent a year haunted by the bad karma she created dissing a boy at a dance, our next storyteller wasn't about to pass up what she saw as the opportunity of a lifetime, even if it meant risking every ounce of good karma that she had.
Hi, I'm Zoe. When I was growing up, I was obsessed with a boy. He was the captain of the soccer team, he was in a band, and all the girls had a crush on him. Most importantly, he had sexy, long hair, so perfectly coiffed that my friends gave him a secret code name, which was Paul Mitchell. This is how we refer to him. So when I was in 10th grade, I found out that Paul liked me. There was one small problem, which was that I already had a boyfriend, and his name is Nick. And he was very nice and funny and smart. We've been dating for a year, and he really loved me a lot. He was just not as hot or popular as Paul Mitchell. So I did what any 15-year-old would do confronted with this dilemma. I dumped Nick via text message while I was shopping with my mom at Delia's. But I was still sort of harboring some guilt over breaking Nick's heart. I was pretty superstitious in an odd sort of way. I basically lived in constant fear of some karmic retribution.
My thinking at the time, and I remember feeling like this karma, bad juju, whatever it was very real, and it made me very paranoid, but it was so, so reductive, right? I just thought, oh, well, because I did this bad thing and hurt someone's feelings, that exact same thing is now going to happen to me. I can't escape it. There's no other inputs. It's just one thing that I did, and that exact thing will happen to me again.
So then immediately I had a new boyfriend, Paul. And after a few months, I started to notice that Paul was losing interest in me. And I feared this was the beginning of some cosmic consequences. June 28th. Paul is in California, staying with his family friend, who is a complete and total genuine grade A skank. She is probably all over him. I haven't talked to him since he left. Normally, I wouldn't be concerned, but first, there's the skank. And then, there's the overwhelmingly eerie parallels between this situation and my summer last year. Last summer at this time, I was with Nick, even though things had been a little shaky. I went on vacation and I didn't talk to him all week. I enjoyed that vacation more than I had enjoyed any of the 8 months we had been together. So I ignored our 8-month anniversary, which occurred during that week, and I dumped him the day I came back. Now Paul is in California with his family, friends, and that skanky hoe bag. We haven't talked, and our 8-month anniversary was yesterday. Fuck my life. So in an attempt to combat whatever bad karmic juju was, I thought, festering in the universe of my relationship, I realized I was going to have to try some new tactics. 4th of July. So me and Sophia planned to bring our boyfriends to the fireworks tonight, but of course, Paul worked instead. He suggested that I go by myself, which was actually really pathetic. So obviously I shot that down, at which point he invited me to play golf with him. Please, please understand when I say there is probably nothing that I wanted to do less. But unfortunately, I've put him under the illusion that I actually enjoy golf in order to trick him into spending time with me. If I'm playing golf with him, he'll actually enjoy himself and then associate that with being with me, and therefore he will think that he enjoys spending time with me. I am not... with the caveat... I am not under the illusion that that is actually an acceptable format for spending time with one's boyfriend, but I am really scraping the bottom of the barrel here. So, just, you know, I did go on to major in psychology in college. That exact phenomenon is called misattribution of arousal. It is very real. It is also incredibly disturbing that at age 15, I was literally trying to figure out how to manipulate my boyfriend's physiological response.
I like felt things going south and slipping, and I was willing to do anything to not let that happen and to try to find any possible external factors that could be impacting it. That then led me to believe, oh, of course, this must be retribution for this happening because this situation feels so similar and with reversed roles.
July 17th. Paul has pulled the absolute biggest dick move known to man. Last night, I invited him over to swim and have dinner, and he said he would probably be over around 3 and he would call me in the morning. He just called me, and he pretended we had no plans whatsoever, and he invited my dad to go golfing with him. Not me, just my dad. I'm not sure what's worse, the fact that he completely disregarded our plans or the fact that he chose my own father over me. I think this is the time I'm actually going to kill him. Yup, this is the one. Later that same day, July 17th. Paul and his parents came over for dinner after their little golf outing. We did hook up in the pool, although he still won't let me make him come. It only gets worse, so. He grabbed my hands right before he was about to, and I asked if he wanted me to stop, and he said that he doesn't want me to, but I have to. And I, since we were in the pool, I was like, there is no mess. So awful. And he was like, I just don't think this is the right time. I feel like we should be alone, right? I have no idea how much lonelier he wants us to get. You can't get any more alone than alone. What, like spiritually? Physically, we were very much alone, but perhaps his penis sensed some sort of supernatural diversion. His penis smelled a presence. I wish I could still write like that now. So, despite feeling like the entire universe seemed to be conspiring against me, I was not going to go out without a fight. I really pressed on this issue. And as we all know, there is nothing men enjoy more than deliberate and intense discussion of their sexual inadequacies. So this went extremely well for me. August 7th. He finally told me why he won't let me make him come. It came down to 3 reasons. 1, he can't really do the same for me. 2, if he was to try to do the same for me, he's worried about the warts on his hands. They're not even that kind of warts. And 3, he doesn't know what to do about the mess. told him that I didn't even particularly want him to do that to me, since it doesn't exactly feel that awesome, which he just couldn't understand. He said that knowing I'm a lot more experienced than him makes him feel weird, and whenever we do anything, all he can think about is me with Nick. I told him that I never really enjoyed anything with Nick that much, and he said that made him feel a lot better. Yikes. Then we talked about the technical definition of the word virgin, which previously he was under the impression that I was not, so we had to clear that up. I told him that even if it was defined as penetration, I still would be, since me and Nick never even did that. He said that made him also feel a lot better. August 14th. Tonight, I almost got him to let me make him come. Technically, he didn't stop me until after he thought that he already had. He actually hadn't, and it's a little concerning that he couldn't tell. But technically, he didn't stop me before it happened. So we're making headway, no pun intended.
In my relationship with Nick, I think it like comes back to this very basic concept of like the reacher and the settler in the relationship. And when I dated Nick, I knew that I was the settler and he was the reacher. And when I started dating Paul, it was very clear that I was the reacher and he was the settler. It was very clear to myself and to him and to everyone else looking on from a distance who was settling in this relationship. I really felt like I was batting out of my league with this one, and I better do everything possible to keep him around. I was desperately searching for any sort of tangible evidence that he did love me and care about me. And I like, even if you're saying that you want to go golfing instead of spend time with me, your body really wants to hang out with me.
So at this point in my battle with the universe, it seemed like I was making some progress, apparently. August 28th, he definitely would have let me make him come today. It was the perfect situation. We were in the middle of nowhere in the woods. So no one was going to find us. Also, we were on a riverbed, so it would be easy to get rid of the evidence. I gave him a 20-minute hand job. Nothing. He seemed like he might have been getting close because he started making weird noises, but it was hard to tell. I was so disappointed because he definitely would not have stopped me, and there is never going to be a situation like that again, completely and totally alone, near water. I think the problem is position. It's way easier to get him to if he's laying on top of me. But it's very hard to lay down in the water if you don't want to drown. So by the time school started that fall, Paul had grown tired of me and lost interest in my apparently mediocre hand jobs. He broke up with me. And not only did he dump me after a year, but less than a month later, he started dating my nemesis, Chloe. In case you have forgotten, my name is Zoe. So this is the ultimate twist of the cosmic knife.
I just remember finding out and being like, well, of course, that's what's going to happen because this is what karma had in store for me. And so naturally, now that I've, now that Paul has broken up with me, then naturally, he will also go on to date someone that I feel threatened by and don't like.
November 24th. Paul and Chloe are together. That was fucking quick. And I realized I did the same thing to Nick last year. I dumped him because I wanted to date someone more popular, and I said that we would be friends, but I didn't follow through. And then I got together with his worst enemy. Karma is not only a bitch, but a skank and a whore and a shallow fake-ass slut that pretends to be your friend so she can steal your boyfriend.
Woo!
And this concludes our look at kids and karma, where we learned what goes around doesn't always come around.
Bad karma brings bad hand jobs. Be careful out there is all I'm saying. Look, like perfect your technique or don't even bother. It's not worth it for anyone.
And if you want to improve your karma, then make sure to share our podcast with your friends on social media. Or you can lift your spiritual burden by confessing all your terrible sins in the pages of My Mortified Life, the official diary of this podcast. It's filled with hundreds of hilarious and thought-provoking writing prompts about all your teen angst memories. Get it on Amazon or learn more about it at getmortified.com, where you can also learn about Mortified stage shows, books, TV stuff, whatever we do. The Mortified Podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, and if your company would like to support it, great, we'd love it. Email sponsor at radiotopia.fm. Our podcast production team for this episode includes the amazing Hadley Dion.
Hi.
Joey Fishground, Neil Ketcher, who's in Spain.
Barcelona.
Hola. And myself, Dave Nadelberg. Shay DeGrandis and Kate Cisneros story produced this for the stage. Music in our series from Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, The Angels, Zoe Rose Palladino, and of course, Snakes, Snakes, Snakes. And a big thanks to all the dedicated Mortified Live producers whose work definitely makes the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you, with a slight twist given recent headlines about the Supreme Court, we are freaks and we are fragile and we support all survivors.